Do the tough things first.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline. Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO and today's guest host. I'm Rob Artigo. I'm a writer and entrepreneur here in California. Thanks for inviting me back for another Tough Things First podcast, Ray.
It's always good to be with you, Rob.
I'm a Gen Xer. You know what a Generation Xer is?
Yes, I hear that a lot. That's basically the ones that are, I think, 35 to 55 or 40 to 55.
The article I have here, and there's some debate as to exactly when a generation starts and ends, I suppose. But for the purposes of this conversation, let's assume that we know that they're over 35 and probably under 55. But this article says 34 to 49. And then there's the millennial generation, which is those about 18 to 33 years old. And there's this competition right now to decide, I suppose, what makes one generation versus another so different. And the idea of attaching the X generation, I'm not exactly sure how they decided to call it the X generation, but it was a name that stuck. But millennial has a different connotation to it, doesn't it? Do you think it's supposed to mean something different?
Well, it's the change of the century, you know, going from the 20th to the 21st century, you know, that we talked about the millennial change at year 2000, they'll call the Y2000 change. You know, there are differences way people view these different generations. A generation generally is like 20 years. And so if you're a Generation X, and I must be Generation XX, because I'm in my 70s. I'm two generations ahead of the millennials.
Are you a boomer?
Yes, probably a baby boomer. Yes, I guess that's a good one. So I guess I'm a baby boomer.
So you're a boomer. I'm a Gen Xer. The people out there listening, or many of them, are millennials. Is it appropriate to apply an overlay over a whole generation and say, this generation is like this? Is that fair?
There is a generation gap. There's always been a generation gap, the older versus the younger. I know that in the program called Survivor that, you know, has these different groups that come on and they pit one group against another. They've had programs where they had the older versus the younger group. But this year they decided to, because of the hype around the millennials, to have the millennials versus Generation X. That's just as a hype thing. So I think a lot of it's hype, you know, like we had the hippie generation, you know, the love child and, you know, free this and free that. And so we've had these periods where the media has grabbed on to the meaning of these different periods of time. You know, the millennials, you know, are supposed to be very optimistic and very naive and, you know, idealistic and you know, they're later to marry, later to have children. They live at home longer. You know, so they've now given them, have wrapped this nice little package around, you know, what constitutes a millennial. And I think it's funny because, you know, all youth are optimistic. All youth are idealistic. That's how you start life. Thank goodness you start off that way. I have this story that I learned when I was getting my master's about that there's four stages that we all go through. It's called the eager neophyte, then we call the polyp stage, the beta bull, and the elder statesman. And this goes back 50 years ago when I got my master's. So this is nothing new. So the eager neophyte is the person who's just starting their job. They're all enthusiastic, energetic, you know, want to change the world. And so they tackle their new job with enthusiasm and then soon find out that, you know, others have been there before and, you know, they're not so eager. They're more settled in. They want to, you know, they just want to, you know, work their 8 hours a day and go home and be with their family. That's called the polyp stage. You know, a polyp is a little grain of coral that grows in these big coral reefs. And so that's how the term polyp comes in. eager neophyte, you can understand where that term comes from. But polyp is that little coral that it becomes a part of a larger piece of coral. And so, you know, they just work their 8 hours a day and they just put in their time and they felt lost the enthusiasm for the job. And then the third stage they go through is they say, well, you know, hey, I'm tired of sitting on my duff and just working 8 hours a day and beating my brains out. I'm gonna fight back. And so as a baited bull, they go on the attack. I mean, they write these nefarious memos. They you know, they're gonna make a name for themselves. They're tired of waiting for that promotion. Then they go to the baited bull stage, and then doesn't last too long, because at the beta bull stage, what happens is that you run out of energy. You lose, you know, you got everybody else firing back at you. So you become a target yourself. So that the final stage you go through, which is you've been now there about 30 years or so, you go to the elder statesman stage. And that's where, you know, you let other people do the fighting for you. You know, you don't fight yourself. You understand your team and you let them do the fighting. And so, you know, a lot of people never make the elder statesman stage. They stay as baited bulls, or they never get out of the polyp stage. But we'd all go through stages. And so the millennials, once they get into their 40s, I guarantee you, they're not going to be idealistic. They're going to be more like polyps or the baited bulls. I mean, they're not going to stay with that mentality that they had as in their 20s. That's the way I see it.
Did you have a respect for, in your generation, did you see a respect for the elder statesman?
Well, I told a story in my book about when I wanted to quit school, and because I want to go and earn some money. And my dad, if you guys want to go read the book, you can read the story. I won't deliberate it here. My dad said, no, you're going to finish school or pay the consequences. And so I'll let you go back and read the story. But my dad was very tough on me, so the only respect I gave him was that I did decide to go back to school, and thank goodness that I did. But I think in all generations, the youth tend not to respect the elders as much as they should. Now, I know that that's different in different cultures. In the Asian culture, there is more respect for the elderly than we have in our culture. And one of the concerns that some of these Asian cultures have is that as their kids become more Americanized more like the Western kids, that they're going to lose respect for their parents. And that's a big concern for the Asian families.
Hmm. One thing that I've noticed personally is that as I start to get close to 50, I've found myself looking at the elder statesmen and think people like you, who I trust and can ask questions of, wanting to ask questions like, you know, what advice do you have for me as I turn 50? And I'm not asking, that's a rhetorical question. I don't need to have you answer that. I don't think I would have asked an older person, what advice do you have for me now that I'm turning 30? You know what I mean? So as I get older, I find that wisdom and trust in the elder statesman to want to ask them for advice. What am I going to do next? Should I be worried about this? What kinds of things should I be concerned about? And actually seeking their advice. Whereas before, I probably didn't care.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I was at lunch yesterday with, he's a dean of business at this major university. And he wanted to know if I'd be willing to mentor a few students in their graduate program, because they had been asking the school, the university, if there were some higher level seasoned executives that they could just talk to, just to get a sense of what they've been through and learn some of the stuff that they can't learn in school. And I said, sure, I'll be happy to help. And so I didn't have that advantage when I went to school. They didn't offer, let us go talk to some of these senior level people, which would really help me. I think what I'm hearing anyway is that more and more of these universities want senior level executives to come in and just talk to their students and give them some real life examples of what they're facing when they get out into the cold, cruel world, as they say. And I think it's great. I think you know, my experience has been we have some scholarships at major universities, and we get a chance to talk to some of the students that we've helped. And it's interesting to hear their love and desire to see how we did it. How did you get to the point where you're now able to offer scholarships to these kids? You know, you must have done something. And they're so interested and eager to learn how we did it. And so I think there's a lot of hope for the youth, more so than there was even during my generation as a youth. So I'm very optimistic that these young people are going to benefit from us older folks, as they say.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Rob.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.